And we are back with On Second Thought from GPB. I'm Virginia Prescott. It is one of the things that divides Americans. State against state, region against region, pork against beef, barbecue. Dry ribs or wet, vinegar or tomato sauce, wood only or propane. While the particulars, origin stories, and claims to be the barbecue capital of the world may vary, Jim Ockmoody found one thing we can agree on. Barbecue has a Southern accent. The veteran journalist and smoked meat Sherpa is out with a new book, Smoke Lore, A Short History of Barbecue in America. And the book dives into the history and evolution and imagery of a tradition that has flavored American culture, identity, and politics since before the nation was a nation. In fact, he's going to be talking about barbecue and politics tonight at the Jimmy Carter Presidential Library. But first, Jim, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Virginia. I've never been called a smoked meat Sherpa.
Well, you know, you can use that if you'd like. You cite dozens of academic and pop culture and cookbook sources already that have been written about barbecue. So what are you adding with Smoke Lore?
Well, barbecue has never been given the truly the big picture historical view, I think, that I'm giving it here. There have been academic histories done, but there's never been a history done that was academically sound, but also as lavishly illustrated as Smoke Lore, and also got across the sense of fun. That's the whole point of
it. It is fun to read this book, I have to say. It's a bit of a romp. And you started researching the book you write when you were 5 years old. So what was your methodology of research?
Well, what I mean by that, of course, is it's in my DNA. I come from a long line of pit masters in Georgia, particularly, my great-grandfather in Bartow County, Georgia, James Robert Ockmoody, my namesake, was a noted pit master up there. But it was my grandfather, Bob Ockmoody, who we knew as Daddy Bob, who was really the renowned pit master. He was featured in this 1954 article in the Saturday Evening Post titled Dixie's Most Disputed Dish. And they just happened to set it at the Uharley Farmers Club Barbecue outside of Cartersville, where he had been the pit master for years. So he's the first picture you see in this thing looking over the pits. And he became quite sought after that. In fact, there was a group in suburban Chicago that had him and some of his pals come up and cook a Southern barbecue and make Brunswick stew for 2,000 people up there.
See, that's the scale of this. It's just unbelievable.
But the funniest thing is when he came back, he was telling all of his experiences to the Cartersville newspaper, and they ran a story about them going up and cooking this barbecue under the tongue-in-cheek headline, Rebels Cook Southern Q in Very Heart of Yankee Land.
Well, it's always been tied in with so many things, and the history tied in with mythology here in many cases. Beginning with the word itself, there are some interesting origin stories for barbecue, which is accurate.
Well, you hear a bunch of them. You hear that it came from a brand on a Texas ranch, BBQ. You hear that it came from the French phrase barbecue, which is supposed to mean head to tail, never mind that a beard to tail, never mind that a pig doesn't have a beard. The accepted version is that it dates to the earliest encounters between the Taino Indians, the native tribes of much of the Caribbean, and the Spanish sailors who came with Columbus. On his second voyage, they saw these Indians out there cooking on the shore of Cuba, and their approximation of the little grill, really the wooden grill that they were cooking fish and lizards on, was a barbacoa.
Okay, lizard. I was going to say beef or pork. What were they cooking?
They were cooking fish, which the Spanish sailors ate hungrily. And they were cooking iguana, which the Spanish sailors thought was disgusting. And but the Taino loved iguana, and they were very relieved that the Spanish didn't steal the iguana, because that's actually what they wanted.
Okay, so there are these images that come back of the Caribbean indigenous people and the Taino Indians cooking in the West India manner, brought back to Europe by artists in the late 1500s. But there's also an early indication here of a kind of duality that would follow barbecue, that it's, you know, both delicious, but it's also bizarre, you know, to them. It's evidence of savagery or low barbaric manners. How did that play out historically, this kind of dual vision?
Well, a lot of the early European depictions of barbecue they portrayed it as something that was savage and wild and was of the new world. And everything they were saying about the new world was this is a really exciting place, but it's also dangerous and savage. And barbecue was a really great example of that. Now, the irony of this, of course, is that barbecue is actually a timeless and universal cooking technique. It appears in almost every culture in the world. They've been doing it since cavemen and women. And so there are barbecue traditions, but the one that really birthed 500 years ago in America and took the word barbecue is probably the most distinctive barbecue tradition in the world, and it's certainly the one that's most wrapped up with its country and its culture. I mean, to me, my central contention in the book is that barbecue is really the most truly American food, not apple pie. And the reason why I say that is because it has roots on five continents. It involves almost every ethnic group that makes up America. It's so wrapped up in our history. It goes back to the beginning of our history. I mean, there's a reason why we have barbecues on the 4th of July. It embodies us.
Hmm. But the South is where, you say, the southeastern seaboard was really the taproot. Why did it take off in the South especially?
Well, it took off in the South because, of course, the colonies in Virginia and North Carolina very early on showed a predilection for eating pork. And pigs sort of became the quintessential early barbecue food. Barbecue was all about having big events on plantations. Usually the cooking was done by African slaves. So they had even though they didn't invent barbecue, they had an outsized hand in sort of creating what we think of as barbecue. And the combination of plantation socializing and all these pigs in Virginia and North Carolina in particular really led to the birth of barbecue culture. And it's really why barbecue has such a Southern accent to this day.
Mm-hmm. And the socializing is the big thing that you're going to be talking tonight about. Politics and barbecues, and this new American cooking became a tool for politicians and campaigns, beginning with the very founding of the Republic, George Washington. How did he tie into barbecue history?
Well, in George Washington's diaries, he mentions going to 7 or 8 barbecues, and he spells it every which way, with an I, with, you know, this idea that we don't know how to spell barbecue goes way, way back, and we've never settled it to this day. What you're talking about is that by the founding of the Republic, barbecue was a very well-known institution in the United States, so much so when they laid the cornerstone for the Capitol building in September of 1793, George Washington, who was the president then, first president, he oversaw the ceremony. He was a Mason. It was a Masonic ceremony. He put on his Masonic apron. He pronounced
the first barbecue apron.
yes, exactly. It was a Masonic apron. And he pronounced the mumbo jumbo over the thing, over the laying of the brick. And then all the dignitaries prepared for a barbecued ox. That's how they celebrated the founding of the American Republic, was barbecued beef, not pork.
Okay, Texans get 1 point there. But this is also interesting that there was a practical purpose during the French Indian War. They smoked meat because they didn't have any salt. So is this an improvisational cooking as well?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it was smoking meat like that. It was something you did at big gatherings, at parties. I mean, when Washington was talking about doing barbecue, sometimes these were 2 and 3 day events. They were long weekends at the plantation, probably with a lot of grog, and yes, a lot of it was about meat preservation. You know, they didn't have refrigeration in those days, and smoking stuff and seasoning it heavily. Salt, pepper, vinegar, the classic sort of Eastern North Carolina barbecue sauce ingredients, was part of making pork last longer.
Barbecue, says my guest Jim Akhmoudi, is America in a mouthful, and we're talking about how that flavor has seeped into many aspects of the nation, as illustrated in his new book, Smoke Lore, A Short History of Barbecue in America. Well, it is still a draw for politicians. You write about in the late 19th and early 20th century, you know, huge gangs of people coming to enjoy free barbecue or as fundraisers. Recently, 22 Democratic candidates attended the House Majority Whip Jim Clyburn's barbecue in South Carolina. You write there's barbecue for war, peace, reunion, including including the Chickamauga battlefield in Georgia. What happened there?
In 1889, one of the most famous barbecues of the 1800s happened. It was a reunion of Confederate and Union soldiers who had fought at Chickamauga. The reason they were going there was they were actually trying to raise awareness for doing national battlefield parks. Mm-hmm. They were trying to preserve the places where the Civil War had been fought. But this barbecue was incredible. Everybody got this beautiful invitation. Everyone who came to it got a corn cob pipe of peace.
Wow.
Which is on display at the Atlanta History Center in the Barbecue Nation exhibition, which I was a curator for, and which is up until September 29th. The accounts, this was written about in the New York Times and a lot of different newspapers because it was such a remarkable barbecue. The centerpiece of it was the Confederates and African-Americans cooked the barbecue, and then the Confederates served it to the Union soldiers. So wow. It was supposed to be a reconciliation.
So there is this history of, barbecue bringing people together, but also, of course, the divisions. You call them the warm disputes that have been going on for some time. And there is, of course, a perennial sticking point. Beef became the norm in Texas after the Civil War, rather than pork. Now, I think it was in a story, and I can't remember exactly who you spoke to, said that that split was actually strategic. What was the strategy there in adopting beef over pork? The idea that they were disassociated with the Southern cotton pickers, I guess.
Well, the main reason beef became the dominant meat in Texas was because there were a lot more cows there than there were pigs. But I think what you're talking about is how Texas barbecue is, of course, Texas is one of the great barbecue hotbeds in America, but it has very complicated roots. And lots of times, if you hear accounts of Texas barbecue, you would think that it's all about the classic places around Austin and the old meat markets, and that it evolved from cowboy cooking, open range cooking. And that is one of the strains of Texas barbecue, but it actually has a lot more to do with Southerners, black and white, moving into Texas and bringing their barbecue culture with them and mingling with the barbecue culture from the south of the border, the mm-hmm. Mexican barbecue culture. So Texas is, I think Rob Walsh, a food historian in Houston, is who you're thinking about. He wrote that Southern barbecue is a thoroughbred with easily traceable bloodlines, and Texas barbecue is a mutt. But it's a glorious mutt.
Well, despite being delicious and bringing people together who may not normally come together, it did not sell in regular dining establishments for a long time. It was, then roadside joints and churches. People would cook it in their homes. When did barbecue become professionalized, for lack of a better word?
Well, for most of American history, barbecue referred to a big event. I've gone back and read all of the so many news accounts of barbecue, digitized newspapers from the 1800s and early 1900s, and it was almost always a political gathering or a community event. It was a big event they were talking about. Barbecue restaurants didn't really start coming about until the very late 1800s and didn't really take off until automobiles became prevalent into the 19-teens, 20s, and 30s. The two oldest barbecue places in Georgia are roadside establishments that opened in the 20s, mm-hmm. Sprayberry's in Noonan and Fresh Air on US 23 in Jackson. And they both very much started to service the roadside people. So what you find is that in the mid-20th century, the sense of the word barbecue changes. We think of it today as referring to a restaurant or to something you cook in the backyard. And 100 years ago, that's not what they thought barbecue was.
Well, growing up in New Hampshire, we'd say, let's have a barbecue, and it meant grilling hamburgers.
Well, and your sense of the word barbecue is actually a modern sense that comes from the rise of backyard cooking, which was not typical until it really didn't take off until about World War II.
Mm-hmm. So, but when did that become, the post-war suburbs took on this barbecue outdoor cooking, but it became really mostly associated with men. Why? Why were men the barbecue chefs?
Well, backyard barbecue cooking,
because there was fire, danger.
Well, yeah. Backyard barbecue cooking really didn't rise until the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. And it really takes off when you start getting these mobile cookers in the backyard and this idea that you build a brick pit in the backyard, like I Love Lucy did, to cook back there. It became part of the suburban good life. And that period actually coincided with probably the height of gender stereotyping in American culture. So if you go back and look at barbecue cookbooks from the 1950s and 60s and the magazines where they wrote about it, it is just amazing and laughable how much they play up the idea that men are supposed to be doing this cooking and that women are supposed to be getting a day off from the cooking chores. And you know, no less an authority than James Beard in one of his cookbooks said, barbecue is men's work.
Well, let's hear a little bit from a clip from an episode of I Love Lucy addressing that very thing.
And then I figured that the grill should be up, say, about that high to keep the smoke out of our eyes.
Now, would that make it kind of awkward for cooking?
Well, we'll get a little stepladder and stand on that.
Oh, a stepladder.
Wait a minute. Where are the blueprints?
Blueprints?
The plans.
Oh, who needs plans? We'll just create as we go along.
Yeah, we thought we'd just ad-lib this barbecue.
Now, just a minute, girls. Just a minute. It is very obvious that you don't know what you're doing. I better do this job myself.
Well, Ethel, I guess that's right. I guess they do know more about it than we do.
Yeah, building a barbecue is man's work.
Yeah.
Well, we are heading right into a break, but quickly, Jim Ockmoody, how many people, is it still true? More women, men rather, cook outside than women?
I don't know the exact statistics, but I think it's pretty clear that men have more of an affinity for going outside and building a fire. But the idea that women are not involved in barbecue was never true, and it's even less true now than it ever has been.
All right, we're going to hang on for just a minute and be back with Jim Ockmoody, author of Smoke Lore, A Short History of Barbecue in America. Louis Armstrong in the background, 1927 song, Strutting with Some Barbecue. And that's what we're going to do after a short break. We are back with On Second Thought from GBB. I'm Virginia Prescott.
Is anybody feed my pig meat on the line? Oh, ho, ho, pig meat on the line.
Memphis Minnie there expressing her love of barbecue, or something, from her 1941 song, Pig Meat on the Line. Like the blues that originated in the American South and were slow-cooked by African Americans over the decades, my guest Jim Ockmoody says barbecue is America in a mouthful, much more so than apple pie. Jim was a longtime award-winning reporter at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and is author of Smoke Lore. It's a short history of barbecue in America. He's going to be speaking about barbecue and politics at the Jimmy Carter Presidential Library this evening. Okay, so I wanted to get back to those outdoor chefs because they bought up the first consumer model Charbroil Wheelbarrow Grill that was made in Columbus, Georgia. A little bit on that company's history.
Well, Charbroil is they're really the second most successful grill maker in America behind Weber. And they make the most gas grills. And they started out as a foundry down in Columbus. And during the Civil War, they made artillery for the Confederacy. But their main business for many, many years was making those old wooden heating stoves that you would find in stores and homes and everything back in the day. And by World War II, the bottom had dropped out of that market. And right after World War II, they started making these mobile cookers. And their first model from 1947 or 8, I forget which year, it is hilarious looking because you can see it in mid-evolution. It is called the Charbroil Wheelbarrow Picnic cooker. And it looks somewhat like a wheelbarrow and somewhat like a smoker. But it's not quite either, and they've got one of those at the History Center, and they've got one actually displayed down at the Charbroil in Columbus too. They're It's quite a barbecue artifact to look at.
Well, you can see loads of pictures in this book. And of course, there are many of them, or most of them, on view at the Barbecue Nation exhibit at the Atlanta History Center.
Probably. There are a lot of them in the book that aren't in the exhibition, but there's a lot of overlap, too. You're right.
Well, you're also bringing up the Civil War and this kind of evolution. This harkens back to Gone with the Wind and one of the most famous barbecue scenes in popular culture. Here is Hattie McDaniel playing Mammy to Vivian Leigh's Scarlett O'Hara in the 1939 film.
Oh, now, Miss Scarlett, you come on and be good and eat just a little.
No,
honey.
I'm going to have a good time today
and do my eating at the barbecue.
There is more to that scene, but it's almost painful to listen to now.
Well, you know, Gone with the Wind has become that way. It's such a beloved film in so many ways, but so much of it looks so dated and sort of wrongheaded to us now. That's a really, you know, to me, that's the most famous barbecue scene in the American movies, is the Gone with the Wind barbecue at 12 Oaks that begins that movie. And it's such a great story because how did they know how to stage a barbecue like that? Well, the guy who was the technical and historical advisor for the Gone with the Wind was Wilbur Kurtz, an amateur historian here in Atlanta. And he didn't know anything about how to stage an antebellum barbecue. So he went and he interviewed a very elderly black man with the great name Will Hill. And he took 6 pages of notes on how to stage an antebellum barbecue. Will was a very young man, was born into slavery, and had direct memory of how these things were done. So Wilbur Kurtz has all these detailed notes, including diagrams of exactly how the meat should be put on the grid and all this other kind of stuff. And that's how they staged that barbecue for 12 Oaks, which was actually staged out in California. They've got those notes at the Atlanta History Center, and I reproduced a page from them there. I just think it's very ironic that this film that is so associated with the Lost Cause and mm-hmm. Old South sentimentality, that they had to go talk to an old black man to find out how to do the barbecue. That speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And there's so much in this book that does speak to that. I'm thinking Hattie McDaniel. She had to accept her Best Actress Oscar for that. After getting it, she had to sit at a way back table at the Coconut Grove in the dark, practically, because it was had a no blacks policy. And race is, of course, a part of barbecue history. And as you point out, barbecue and slavery took root at the same time. But when we look back now, what does that tandem rise reveal about the origins and the evolution of barbecue?
Well, when I told people I was working on this book, a lot of folks would ask me, didn't black people invent barbecue? And I've got a whole chapter in the book called The Color of Q that actually sort of deals with that question, because the answer to it is no, they didn't invent barbecue. No one ethnic group invented barbecue. It really has very complicated multi-ethnic roots stretching across 5 continents. But damn, it sure seems like they did, because they're so profoundly identified with it in ways that are both offensive and stereotypical, and in ways that are admiring, you know, the mastery of the pitmaster and all that. So I think they are particularly identified, African Americans, with barbecue in America. And I think it was worth an examination. A friend of mine right now in Denver, a food historian, is writing a book specifically about blacks and barbecue, mm-hmm. and I think it's going to be fascinating.
Well, you make the point that it blurred the color line in so many different ways. Barbecue is one of these kind of gathering points. It's also a place where a black-owned business may draw white customers, whereas other black-owned businesses, especially during the Jim Crow era, would not have done that. And it actually, it was barbecue shops that became the source of some Supreme Court cases that fought against segregation. Can you illuminate a little bit of that history for us?
Well, when the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was passed, we in Atlanta know that Lester Maddox and his fried chicken place filed one of the challenging lawsuits. But two of the other significant lawsuits that were filed came out of barbecue places. One of them was Maurice Bessinger's Piggy Park in Columbia, South Carolina. But the really key case was Ollie's Barbecue in Birmingham, Alabama. And Ollie felt like if he started serving black customers in the regular restaurant, he had always served them at the back door, that he would chase off all his white customers. And so he challenged the law. And he lost his case. And he desegregated. Unlike Lester, who closed his fried chicken place and ran for governor, Ollie desegregated. So you know, it, given that civil rights, that the South was a battlefield for it and that this was the land of barbecue, of course they were going to figure in litigation over it.
And Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. King, also admired barbecue. And in fact, there's a great quote in your book. He admired Gandhi's philosophical framework very much, but said Gandhi had obviously never tasted barbecue.
I think I've got that quote in there. King lived in the West End neighborhood over on Sunset, and there was a great barbecue place that was there for many years called Alex Barbecue Heaven that was his favorite place. And he used to go there and get ribs. Andrew Young told me that he used to write speeches after he had had ribs at Alex Barbecue Heaven, because if you had a really complicated, greasy meal like that, you had to stay up late at night thinking about it. And so, but when King was killed, the people at Alex, actually some years later, Pam Alexander, who was the daughter of the founder, she made a Martin Luther King Jr. memorial booth at the back of the restaurant with a brooding portrait of King there. And basically, I went to Alex several times, and you always felt like you shouldn't sit at that booth unless you were invited. Mm. And Pam told me that's exactly what it was. You had to be invited to sit there.
Well, so we are glad that you've sat in many booths of eating barbecue, because there is so much that you reveal here. But, you know, again, back to that idea that the disputes over barbecue have always been somewhat warm, somewhat comical, but not always. What are some of the big fights in the world of barbecue, if we're talking about the technicalities, the techniques?
You're talking about wood versus gas?
I think that's a biggie.
Yeah, the traditional barbecue places have always been all wood. But as the technology has changed, I would say that the majority of barbecue places in America right now do not cook over all wood. Most of them actually cook on gas hybrid cookers like Southern Pride or Old Hickory or the brands. And what these are, they're really marvelous machines. What they are is they're gas ovens that regulate the heat, and you don't have to have somebody there at 4 o'clock in the morning tending a fire. And you can put in the wood to get the flavor, and you can get as much wood flavor as you want or as little wood flavor as you want. And some of the best barbecue places around actually use these gas hybrids now, and they're as good as the people who are using them. Community Q in Decatur uses gas hybrids. Pig and Chick uses gas hybrids. But there's also been a movement back, particularly with sort of high-end crafty barbecue, to doing all wood. And, you know, you can taste the difference, but some of the gas hybrids, if you've got the right people using them, are pretty close.
All right. So are you willing to go on the record, Jim? Pork, beef, vinegar sauce, tomato sauce?
Oh, I am so ecumenical when it comes to barbecue. As far as the sauce goes, it depends on what the meat is. To me, I mean, I love Eastern North Carolina style whole hog, or like Brian Furman has done here in Atlanta at B's Cracklin' Barbecue. And the best sauce for that is that spicy vinegar sauce with any tomato in it. But there's a whole different thing that you would use on beef. And, you know, I've certainly got my list of the places where I've had great barbecue meals and all that, but I can't pick a single place because it depends on what you want. And you were telling me the other day that the smoked tofu at Heirloom Market Barbecue is pretty darn good.
I can't
wait to try that.
What do you prefer with your iguana?
My iguana?
to be as far away as possible.
That's the day I'm going to have a salad.
Jim Achmoudi, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Virginia. This has been fun.
Jim Achmoudi, he is the author of Smoke Lore, A Short History of Barbecue in America. He's one of the curators of Barbecue Nation, the show which is still on view and will be until September at the Atlanta History Center. And talking tonight about barbecue and politics at the Jimmy Carter Presidential Library this evening. We're going to leave you with a more updated barbecue song, Skew It on the Barbie from Outkast.
ATL is our boy. Come on, holler on in, holler on in. Let's do it. Got that family. East one. Wu-Tang, Outkast.